Hello everyone, I am Jessica Saxton, the Environmental Education Outreach Leader through United Communities AmeriCorps and the host of Living Downstream. Umpqua Watersheds values both human and ecological diversity. We acknowledge that the land upon which Umpqua Watersheds is located was formerly occupied and tended by various indigenous groups, including Cow Creek Umpqua, Coquille, Mulala, and others. Their history is intertwined with this place, and we seek to continue to practice stewardship and reciprocity towards the natural environment which indigenous people did for thousands of years prior to European settlement. We celebrate the strengths and perspectives that different people have to offer, and believe that organizations, communities, and ecosystems are all more resilient when they embrace the unique gifts various individuals can contribute.
Hello, everyone. I have Max Schmoot with Frog Legs Studio joining us to talk about his art studio and his journey as an artist here in local Roseburg, Oregon. Thank you for joining us today. Could you provide a little bit of background about yourself and what you do?
Hi, I'm Max. I grew up in Roseburg. I was born here and raised and was highly interested in art at a young age. And I've been a skateboarder for a long time. Okay, so anyway, I'm pretty well known as like an artist and a skateboarder around town by most of the locals that like I grew up with and stuff. And let's see, I like reading and building stuff. And I went to school for a little while, like lived in Eugene for a little while, and then came back down to Roseburg and started a family. I've got an 8-year-old son, and me and his mom are split up, but we're co-parent, you know, good, happy co-parent. And, you know, I moved back down from Eugene to be closer to my family because that's where, you know, I just feel safe and comfortable. And I guess, anyway, yeah, I've just always been interested in bringing, you know, art and culture together and bringing people together and, you know, sharing the abundance of what we have.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great. So out of curiosity, since you're a skateboarder, do you skate at the parks here still, or is that a past?
Yeah, sometimes. I go to the skate park sometimes. It's been a little while now because I've been pretty busy, but it's definitely something I like to do. I just got to be careful because, you know, it's always possible to hurt myself.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, anyway, I get pretty excited about skateboarding. So, yeah, I like to break out the skateboard every once in a while. We started a skateboard company a while ago called Question Skateboards, me and my friend Stefan, and we didn't really take it off the ground, but we got some skateboards printed, and I just keep dreaming of having a big space where you could like build skateboards and build things and build large art projects and, you know, share. Anyway.
I think it would be really cool if we had a shop where you could go in and customize your own skateboard and like create your own design. Yeah. I think the kids would love it around here.
Yeah.
Well, so moving on, when we spoke last, you said you had lived in Eugene for a bit. What drove you to Roseburg? I mean, you mentioned that family was here, but as far as having a local art studio, I feel like maybe Eugene is more like open to art, but bringing it to Roseburg's great as well. So what drove you to go to Roseburg specifically?
Well, it just seems to be starving for some culture and some art and stuff. And I think a lot of people would like to see more stuff like this going on. It is kind of tempting, you know, I mean, it was partly out of like financial obligation or just difficulty, I guess. I've always been kind of intimidated by like committing to paying large sums of money, you know, and what's considered large. I don't know. I mean, I just never really got into like having an apartment or a job or a space, you know, to like rent as a committed tenant or something. It's always been through a friend or something. And, you know, like when I moved to Eugene, I went right to the student co-ops. It's like a student, like commune kind of thing in an old sorority with like a bunch of people working together. And so that's how I learned to screen print. I was there. They had a bunch of screen printing material. Yeah, some people knew kind of how to use it, but I just kind of picked up on it and was able to become the kind of house screen printer and artist for those kinds of things. And so then when I came back to Roseburg, I realized there's a farmer's market and I could just get a booth there and start selling t-shirts because I actually was you know, friends with some people that were involved in a screen printing operation, you know, screen printing business. So I was able to help out with that and kind of exchange work for t-shirts in their orders to just print on the shirts. And then I brought them to this farmer's market. And I just saw that a lot of people were excited to see some fresh colors and stuff, because just all my art's super colorful and kind of whimsical and kind of, you know, appeals to a wide variety of demographics and age groups and stuff. So,
yeah. Do you still do that at the farmer's market?
No, I did that for quite a while, and I was doing buttons and stuff. I have a button maker. I don't know, quite a few years ago, I stopped doing the farmer's market because I feel like, you know, I was just ready for something else, I guess. And it wasn't, you know, I don't really feel comfortable long-term, like, selling things. Like, for a while, it was pretty exciting. It was like wheeling and dealing. But I guess, I mean, it's partly because of I don't have as much product that I'm excited about selling these days. Getting back on my feet as far as production goes and being able to invest in, you know, making stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense. So it sounds like you've had a bit of a journey. And like most artists, it can be a difficult journey, you know, financially and artistically. So could you tell us a bit about how Frog Leg Studio came to be?
Well, yeah, it's funny because it's out of that difficulty and kind of challenge of not really knowing what I'm going to do with all of my art supplies that I've been collecting over the old years. And, you know, ever since I had a studio called Cast Studio, ever since that was terminated, the rental agreement there, I wanted to make it like a mobile studio. So every once in a while, when I did something that I thought was pretty cool, I'd share it on my Facebook and try to keep Cast Studio alive, even though I didn't have the shop. And, you know, I was working on getting my screen printing set up kind of mobile and on wheels. And a friend of mine gave me a cart that worked pretty good to attach the screen printing setup to. And let's see. So where am I going with this? So that's the main anchor. Anyway, so I kind of got this press through a family kind of a deal where they didn't need it anymore. I've just had it for a while, and it's 6-color screen printing press with 2 stations. So it makes it kind of small, you know? And it's a dinosaur. It's like an old version. Like, it doesn't have the micro registration. It's got like magnets to hold this. Really interesting. And it's kind of fun to play around with, you know, just to get your feet wet doing screen printing. And I just think it would be kind of a joy for me to be able to share this with people and, you know, allow people to print their poster and t-shirt ideas or whatnot. Because really, screen printed posters are pretty awesome.
How is it different, I guess? I mean, this is the first time I've actually seen a screen print. I don't know what it does or what it's used for.
Yeah, like it's in the commercial screen print, you know, apparel industry that are printing on everything. So anyway, I've got some here like that are poster prints, and because I don't have electricity. Anyway, I got to finish telling my story. So the Cast Studio went mobile because I wasn't evicted. I was pretty much evicted. Anyway. Couldn't come up with the rent 1 month. Couldn't talk my way out of it. Had to move out. It was kind of a blessing because it had been a hoarder den. I'm kind of a hoarder in a lot of ways. So anyway, I shouldn't talk. Please edit that part out. Anyway, I mean, it wasn't booming financially. I wasn't, you know, I was kind of struggling, you know, so it was like, okay, I am not going to pay this month's rent. I'm going to get out of this place. Didn't really have anywhere to move to. I was able to, you know, store things in my mom's backyard for a while. And like, let's see, all my screens. I've got a bunch of screens and just old stuff that I've been hoarding for, you know, I've been storing and saving for a long time because I know it's valuable and it just needs a space. So anyway, I'm looking around and there's like the only social scene in Roseburg is at the bar, right? So, I mean, there's a lot more, but like there's music and stuff at the bars sometimes. Anyway, I'd like to expand that into more of an all ages thing or family oriented things or non-alcohol related. And, you know, right next door to the Wild Rose Bar, I'm looking at this little spot and it's like a cave, totally abandoned, you know, neglected property. I was thinking, wow, I wonder how much it would be to rent that out. And you know, I started talking to about it, you know, other people that had the same observation that it was unused space that probably could be useful for something. And so that's why I was like, okay, that's just enough room for my screen printing press with my two stations, because it doesn't take up a whole big, you know, circular area. You kind of push it in the corner when you're not using it. Anyway, and then so I just started digging away, like, okay, who owns this building? How do I get a hold of them? I talked to the Rose Bar. They're like, okay, Neighbor Works Out Co. owns the building. It's low income housing because it's part of the Rose Apartments. And so I talked to Neighbor Works Out Co. I called them up and said, hey, you know, there's this property and I don't know what you guys are going to do with it. But basically, I got a little meeting with their crew and their staff, kind of. And they liked my idea of having a studio space that was like kind of communal and, you know, community studio space where you could, you know, there was like enough room for two or three people to just do some stuff. Maybe we could, you know, start doing. And that's the cool thing about it is it's still a mobile studio. Like we can use other spaces. I mean, I want to organize events and stuff in the public space, and maybe even install art in the public space and just do some epic things, you know, that like maybe don't seem possible at first glance, or things that, you know, seem like would cost too much money or something, or, you know, I don't know. I mean, I've always felt kind of limited by financial struggles. So, I mean, that's why I kind of told them, I was like, I don't have any money for this. I'm not going to pay rent especially for a little space like that. I don't even know if it has electricity or a sink. It doesn't have a bathroom. So, you know, there's limitations and, but it's just enough and it's just what I need for, like, you know, to start screen printing again and making buttons and doing art workshops and, you know, having like a headquarters outside my home, you know, my house where I live and stuff.
Can I ask how the studio acquired the name Frog Lake?
Oh yeah. So it was already written on the front of the window. Somebody tagged the window, so it's Frog Leg. And I've seen the tag other places too, so it's somebody who doesn't seem to have tagged anything very recently, but I just like the name, and I figured, okay, they've dubbed it Frog Leg, maybe without even knowing it, but nobody else tagged that wall. So I was like, okay, I'm going to honor the name Frog Leg, at least for now, because I don't know what else to do. I'm not trying to get creative with the name or anything. But it does lend itself to a certain kind of metamorphosis, kind of, you know, like a piece of something that's going to launch into something more like a whole thing. I don't know. But and because, you know, it doesn't have a bathroom, you can't really do much with this little space, but it can be something that kindles new things, I guess. I don't, I'm, you know, and mostly, you know, I just go back to why I even did this, because I needed a space. I was trying to figure out what to do. I know other people probably could use a space to like drop off a canvas and maybe do some oil painting or something, or spray painting, or, and there's not very good ventilation for spray painting, but, or, you know, just explore some messy mediums that you might not be, you know, so readily able to do at home.
I definitely know we have a lot of artists in the area. A few of my friends from high school are artists, but it seems like most of their stuff is on like Instagram and just online. And I wish they had a space to store all of their art and somewhere just to really get into it rather than, you know, doing it at home. So I think in the long term, someone could definitely move in there with you and would really appreciate what you're doing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, eventually I kind of want to like find a way to raise some money or make something that's like profitable enough to where we can have a whole space, like a bigger space with lots of tools and, you know, really have a maker space. I mean, that's kind of what I started talking about with NeighborWorks, was like, well, you know, it's something. Like, there's no maker space in town. People have been talking about it for like 10 years. And I don't know. Maybe we could start like with a grant or something. I don't know. Or a loan, or I don't know. Whatever. and start making some epic art and really charging full price for it and actually distributing it with the internet using, networks elsewhere from Roseburg. Because obviously that's the big difficulty for artists around here. There's not a whole bunch of art culture and stuff. Liven up the spirits and stuff while you're trying to make your living or whatever so you can make your art. Anyway, yeah.
So I saw you at the UCC Earth Day events. It looked like you were hosting a.
Upcycle art workshop.
Yeah, yes. And that's an example of like the mobile art studio, right? Going around to different locations and working
Yeah.
with the community.
Yeah, that was perfect.
What happened after the students made the art? Like, where did it go?
You know what happened actually? We there's about three or four people there, and two of them kind of had their own projects going on. I had all these materials gathered to like make some art, found art sculpture. And I just haven't done that in so long, kind of, and I guess I kind of just I got sidetracked. I found these pieces of paper that I had, and we made bags out of them. We made paper bags by gluing them together, and it was really awkward, and I couldn't figure out how to do it. And I realized, like, I'm not good at teaching. Maybe I'm not that good at teaching art workshops, but I could probably work on it and get better at it because I think I could share a lot with like the way I approach, doing found art and trash art and recycle art, upcycle art and stuff. I mean, as far as art goes, because there's all these crafts you can do that are like pre-can, like you can find them on Pinterest or whatever. But I like to just make a wall hanging out of just, rust and stuff. I mean, there's another guy who does that, really inspired me around here. Haywire, whatever they call it. Haywire sculptures. Pretty awesome artist. And he's got his stuff on display over at the Mid Oregon Printing. It's a pretty cool place.
So, is most of your medium like upcycling, or do you like to paint? What's your preferred media?
You know, I'm really liking painting wall-sized murals, and I've been recently just been using plywood scraps to like cut out my little characters and then paint them. So I'm kind of working on a lot of stuff that's like upcycling with the plywood. But I mean, plywood's hard to work. It's a lot of work to like sand and everything. So I'm trying to think of something else. Anyway, your question was more like, let's see, what kind of mediums do I do? I like to paint. I like to do spray painting. Street art is really inspiring to me. Aerosol, the medium is amazing. I love doing stencils. I haven't done that many lately anyway. I really like to look into just whatever mediums I have access to. But yeah, I mean, I don't really make a lot of like upcycle art other than, the plywood things I'm doing. Just trying to use the art supplies that I see that people give me art supplies. They leftover stuff, they give it to me. And like, well, this one guy gave me a whole bunch not too long ago, like last year. And I've got a bunch of paint, a bunch of paint brushes of different kinds, and like a bunch of rollers and just random art stuff, and I want to share it. And share the burden of like dealing with, the mess afterwards with like the kind of like a creative sip or what do you call it? Paint and sip.
I found something that I really enjoyed with the students while teaching. We would collect leaves and grass and flowers, and they would paint them and then imprint them and then use paintbrushes to create their own whatever they were seeing. And it really brought out a lot of the artisticness in the kids, just their own creativity. Yeah. So
Yeah, you don't have to have a bunch of expensive stuff. Yeah, like
Let's see, you can find it anywhere, and they loved it. I feel like stuff like that would really bring everyone out and get all ages involved. That's fantastic. I'm so excited that we have, the opportunity to have kind of a community art space rather than just like the art gallery here in town where they display, like, we have an upcoming art event and you can go and look at art. But I really like the opportunity to make art as a group. It's pretty
yeah, I
cool.
mean, the Umpqua Valley Arts Association has been a huge inspiration to me and encouragement, over the years. I really appreciate what they're doing, and they're doing a lot more of lately that I'm really pretty excited about.
Could you foresee yourself in the future maybe doing a large mural downtown on some of the older buildings?
I'd like to. I keep thinking about it, and I think that's my thing is I gotta do the marketing a little better. Get, you know, a website going and like a portfolio kind of, because you know, once you have that, you can actually go out and say, hey, look, I paint murals, I can do this. And otherwise it's like I've been like used to just things falling into my lap, so I don't really go out and pursue them as much as I probably should. And nobody's going to come ask me to paint a mural unless like I can show that I've, you know, done it before. But I like that they're painting a lot of murals lately, and I need to start organizing for the season for that.
I definitely love them. I think it adds more culture and color to downtown and just overall in general. I would be excited to see some of your art up around town for sure. So do you have any events coming up or community ways that the community can engage or view some of your art?
You can come by the Frog Leg if you see somebody there, or also you can, well, because I'm there intermittently and by appointment, so you can make an appointment if you want, if there's something to make an appointment for. But yeah, it's really experimental. I'm thinking about doing some weekly and monthly events, kind of like happening, little pop-up shops, maybe a little pop-up boutique. Again, I don't have power here. They couldn't figure out how to get the wires working in this thing because there's like a short, and NeighborWorks accepted the bid to rewire it, I guess. They got a bid. So at some point I'm going to be able to turn the lights on and stuff. But before that, I want to do some cool stuff here while it's just a cave, you know. And I've got a button maker that doesn't require any electricity. There's a lot of stuff with, you know, batteries and stuff that we can use, or just no electricity at all. And like air dry poster screen printing. I want to make some posters because you can screen print on t-shirts, but like unless you have a big stack of them that you need to print, it's kind of cost prohibitive. Anyway, I it's not good for like practicing. And you know, the whole point is to get people a chance to do some practice, you know, play around with some ink and the screens and get some of the graphics that you can imagine.
How would someone go about following you online?
Oh yeah, you can look up Cast Studio Frog Leg on Facebook. And also Max Art. Because this whole Frog Leg thing is like a separate brand. I mean, it's part of the branding of Max Art, I guess. But it's not so much about me. Like, I don't, you know, I've got this brand, Max Art, and that's my company or whatever. Frog Leg is about community and not so much about, like, me and my creations or whatever. Although I'll use my creations to, you know, market the cause and, you know, get people on board. Yeah, you're asking what events and stuff. I was thinking about doing, like, a thing where you could send in your button logo idea, and we're going to make pinback buttons here, you know, like political buttons or whatever message or art you want on your button. And we can, you know, you can come by on Wednesdays or something and press your buttons, or just press some buttons that need to be pressed. If, you know, if we get like an order of buttons from some local band or something that wants some of their logos on buttons. Anyway, you know, it's just one little thing I want to do. I really want to do screen printing posters and stickers. And there's just so much. I mean, I could go on and on about all these different things that I really would like to do, but it's always about the opportunity. And like, I need to put some focus on the things that are going to be accessible and make other things possible. So I'm always like, well, what am I making buttons for, you know, when I should be like painting murals or something? I don't know. But you just got to do whatever you can when you can.
Do you think you might have an opportunity for volunteers to learn how to screen print if someone wants to come in and spend a few hours here and there working on projects with you?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the idea. And so I was thinking, you know, buttons on Wednesdays, and like maybe Mondays would be screen printing, get the press going and have a little entry level art workshop, you know, where anybody just off the street could come in and learn a little something about how this goes. A lot of the, you know, the people that walk by are really excited about this. One day I put out this TV that I found in the alley down the street, put some markers out so people could draw on it, and like a bunch of people just tagged up the TV, and it was pretty fun. There was even a little kid that came by with his parents that got to like draw on the TV. It was kind of fun.
I was wondering about that, if you put something out in front of the shop, if people would come by and add their own stuff to it.
Yeah, so that's another thing. Like, there's so many possibilities to use the space right out front, you know, right outside this little space here. And I've got like access to a hose, so we could even have like misters and like make it nice and cool and stuff. I don't know. Nice. Have like a festival or something. Or take over the whole street. Because there's that Altrissa book sale that was just at. And I was just thinking, yeah, we should have like a flea market or something over here. Band music or something. And some food trucks. A big screen printing press out in the middle of the street. Turning screen prints that say like Rosebud rocks. Like, what's the message we want to send? Like, gratitude, really, and fun and joy, you know. That's my message, kind of, and hard work for the cause.
What inspired you to get into art rather than go into like the job force? You know, what inspires you to make art?
I think it's just all the ideas in my head that are partly formed and need me to draw them or develop them, work out the details and stuff, and then develop. My mind is constantly creating. I mean, everybody does it. You're creating simulations in your head about every single thing, every moment of the day. And usually it's, you do it for practical purposes to like avoid making mistakes or analyzing your environment or whatever. But I don't know. I mean, I just come up with like all kinds of little ideas for comics and stuff that just never let me go. And I figure the ones that I forget because I didn't have time to write them down or whatever will come back usually. And they'll come when I'm inspired, you know. Usually that's when I'm just kind of going through some growth and internal struggle, but then also achieving some kind of, you know, greater control in my life, I guess, at least that I can perceive. Yeah, it's good to feel like you can be in control of things. But yeah, anyway, what made me decide to go into art? You know, I have always been able to just go and get a job. Let's see, the closest thing I had to a career was like I worked at a screen printing shop and I was doing embroidery for a while. But, you know, that kind of got too monotonous and noisy. And I feel like kind of a wuss. You know, I should be working at the mill or something and working hard and making lots of money. Because there's this huge demand for money. Everybody's like, why don't you have any money? And I don't know. It's just kind of more and more through life. I don't know. I just kind of try to reject that as much as I can. Although I know everything costs money and I do need to embrace the need for, you know, financial stability. But that's the thing, like every time you make profits as like an artist or a small business, you don't get to like have a paycheck. You just scrape by and put everything back into your business because it's always hungry for more investment and like more ink and more paint and more time. So yeah, you have to be strategic about it. It's kind of like it's not easy. So, you know, I don't know, I've always been able to find ways to get by.
Do you ever start to make art or start a project and then you get into it and it's just not going the way you want?
Yeah, for sure.
How do you handle it?
I start over and sometimes I stop drawing. That's a horrible thing, but sometimes I go long periods of time without drawing and stuff. And I think that's one way of coping with it because it's like, okay, I can't be perfect. I don't want to do it. But, you know, that perfectionism is just so paralyzing. And so that's why I like to have a collective kind of approach where, you know, there's other people around with sharing different perspectives. So you don't get stuck too much in your own little analysis, you know, because that's where we get in trouble, the analysis and the rationalization of everything. Like, oh, well, it has to be like this because whatever, we make up so many reasons. Anyway, I like to think that, you know, it's all pretty arbitrary when it comes down to it.
Do you ever go back to a piece of art that, you know, at the time you weren't able to, you know, really get into it or it just wasn't looking right? Do you ever go back and work on them again?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I've got tons of half done ideas. Part of what's exciting about my art, I think, mostly is that I can like sketch things really quick and it has some character and like movement and feeling to it, you know, with pretty minimal effort and minimal lines, you know. And like, so, you know, I don't tend to finish things all that much. I just like to start a little drawing and share, you know, just the raw feeling of it. But yeah, they're always, every single one is like another thing that you go back to and kind of start thinking of, you know, I go back and develop characters that have started as just random doodles. And it's cool when you realize that you can really just do anything and you don't have to, I guess, hold yourself back based on some, you know, things making sense or being rational or whatever, you know?
Yeah. I noticed on Facebook you posted something about a comic. I wanted to ask who made the comic and if it's something that maybe you would see yourself doing in the future.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm trying to think of what the post was that you're referring to. But I do post things about comics a lot. And I tend to, like, promise things and go on Facebook and go, oh, look, I've done this drawing now. And this comic is coming out next week or pretty soon. Stay tuned. And I'm just like, you know, I was working on a mealworm farm for a while. So I just started going crazy and drawing mealworms and beetles. And that goes right with all the comics I want to make, which is about compost, like critter. I want to make like compost critters is one of the names, or like compost. I don't know, just stuff about compost and microorganisms and small creatures and, you know, wildlife and plant life, and have all the characters be these different things, kind of like A Bug's Life or Ant's Life or whatever, all those movies.
That'd like be it's cool.
A massive thread through our pop culture and entertainment industry, and like I feel like I've got some fresh ways of doing it. I think that it's really an amalgam of all the people that I've been able to share these ideas with, some of them, you know, family, and you know, other people that have just I'm able to connect with and like develop these ideas and find value in them. Like even just creating a science fiction comic or whatever about like future. Cause that's another idea. Like I've got several to like probably a dozen or more of these concepts for comic books that I need to start creating actually.
I think that would be really cool.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of comics out there. I'm trying to read the Robert Crumb version of the, anyway, there's a lot of education to be had about the history of comic art and lowbrow art and stuff like this. And I need to get in the routine of releasing the things that I'm creating in my head and not getting on paper yet. Anyway.
I think if you had a comic about worms and composting, I would totally read it and use it for education purposes.
And that's what I want to do, is make it like educational and entertaining.
On a different side note, would you be open to making like board games?
Board games, that sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, like so I have a game. It's called Invasopoly, and it's basically Monopoly but with invasive species. And I need someone to make, like, all the cool cards and the pieces. Yeah. Stuff like that.
That sounds awesome.
Awesome. Yeah. I know there's a market for it, definitely.
Yeah. That sounds like a cool game. I did kind of do a game design for this one guy who was an AmeriCorps volunteer a long time ago in Roseburg here. And I was pretty proud of it, but I never got to see the end product of it. I keep going back to see like his Facebook page. Anyway, that just reminded me of that because I don't know, it's kind of fun to like design something for a game. I keep thinking about how I can like design cards for like a card game that I can make.
I currently have a card game that we play that's called Fish or Not a Fish. And a lot of the pictures are blurry, and I think they'd be really cool if they were like painted rather than just off the internet. So that's another example of something that I'd love to really improve upon for the kids. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah. I definitely think you're in the right place, and there's so much to do here. And I think that a lot of people, once they hear about you and kind of get to know you, they'll have a lot of stuff for you to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, is there anything you want to share with the audience about, you know, your studio or yourself or projects, anything like that?
Well, stay tuned for, you know, Frog Leg is going to get zapped into having power pretty soon. And I'm going to install the sink also. And so, you know, I think within the month or so, we should be like open for certain hours, and I'll have it written on the window or something. I'll make sure everybody knows, you know. And actually, I'm going to put up some flyers too. So just, you know, look out for that stuff and tell your friends the frog leg is kicking, you know. And like, if you're interested, you know, help. I'm not good at organizing this stuff. Like, I need to get more people involved who are passionate about this and who have the time. But yeah, I want to make it like a collective thing. You know, I've heard of other places, even more rural than Roseburg, you know, that have like a whole makerspace in the library or something. A friend of mine tells me about her hometown. And I'm just like, why don't we do that? We should be able to do that. There's money for it. We can get grants. We can make stuff for people and make tons of money.
Yeah, and, definitely.
So we can invest back into all our arts, art ideas and actually like do the cool stuff we want to do in Roseburg and like embrace the nitty gritty of just the way it kind of is around here and, you know, change it. So yeah, thanks for having the time to do this. And I feel like I could thank many people for, you know, boosting me into this position, really. Yeah, if anybody wants to help make stuff, like I've got too many ideas, too many things to be made for just one person in one lifetime. So
would you be interested in, say, like a volunteer to help coordinate events or like post stuff online, just kind of like public image?
Yeah, you know, even just having a second pair of eyes just going, okay, here's like a perspective outside of, you know, me, to just kind of, I don't know, give some guidance as far as like suggestions. I don't know, really. I mean, I don't know. I want to make a routine to where I do have time to like regularly do stuff here and have, you know, have a resource that people can use. And, you know, if you have an idea, I'd say just kind of share it.
Thank you. And I wish you luck with your studio, and I hope the community engages with you, and I'm excited to see what you do in the future.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Living Downstream. And now, a special segment brought to you by Green Teacher.
In our ongoing efforts to engage with people from as many different communities as possible, we will speak to guests whose views may variously differ from or align with yours. Green Teacher is an inclusive space, and we welcome people from all backgrounds, perspectives, and faiths in a collective spirit of collaboration and exploration. This is Talking with Green Teachers, a show where environmental educators discuss recent developments, big ideas, and creative approaches to teaching green. In this episode,
I want to start a bubble movement with young artists that can submit their work to a website that we're still planning, and we can put their credits in the description of the art, and just as for either like social justice or like environmental issues, we're still working on it, but I think it's a great idea.
There's a terrifying plastic monster growing larger by the day in the North Pacific Ocean. Bogomogo is the original creation of Aria Luna, one of the world's youngest exhibiting artists. The quest to defeat Bogomogo is the name of the coloring book story, conceptualized by Aria Luna and written by her mom, Brigitte Racine. The coloring book pages were illustrated by Luba Racine Ortoleva. This open source resource for parents and teachers is all about saving our oceans from plastic pollution. Here is Aria Luna herself reading excerpts from the book, interspersed with a chat Ian had with her and her mom.
Many years ago, a monster named Bogomogo spawned in the northern Pacific Ocean in a place humans call the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. No one knew then that the small bundle of plastic arms and legs that had begun to move would become one of the greatest menaces to humanity. But first, what is the Great Pacific Garbage Patch?
It's a vast free-floating island of trash that has collected in what scientists call the North Pacific Gyre. Did you know that the North Pacific Gyre is the largest ecosystem on the planet? It covers most of the northern Pacific Ocean and spans 20 million square kilometers. It is very difficult to estimate how much trash and plastic are swirling around in the Great Pacific Garbage Patch because the plastic breaks up into tiny pieces called microplastics and sinks slowly to the seabed. But researchers estimate there are approximately 1.8 trillion pieces of plastic in the patch, weighing an estimated 80,000 tons.
So we are here with Aria Luna, one of the youngest exhibiting artists working in the world today. And we're specifically here to talk about a story called The Quest to Defeat Bogo Mogo. Now, many people out there probably have never heard of Bogo Mogo, and I think it's very important that they do hear about Bogo Mogo. So Aria Luna, can you please tell us a little bit about Bogo Mogo? Like who he is, where he lives, how he grows.
So Bogo Mogo is a plastic monster and spawned in the Great Pacific Garbage Patch and eats plastic to grow bigger and bigger every day. And there are also four guardians of the sea who are trying to stop him from getting too big and taking over the seas. But they can't hold him back for so long because he's getting bigger and bigger every minute. Also, Bogo Mogo has sharp inkjet claw printers that inject plastic sludge into the marine life, and it turns the marine life into plastic zombies.
Tell us a bit about the Guardians of the Sea. I know there are four characters. Two are partly original creations. Well, they're really all original creations, but two are real creatures, and two are sort of a combination of real and imaginary creatures. So who are the Guardians?
So Pearl the sea turtle is a sea turtle with like shiny scales on her back, so it reflects sun and kills like bad stuff. Finn the sea dragon is a half seahorse, half dragon, and he has special bioenzymes that digest the plastic sludge and turn the marine life back into normal life. There's also Hornet the dragon eel who is very mysterious and with her fins and tail can create this web of electric poison that hurts Bogo Mogo. 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 No.
It's a good tongue twister. Say Bogo Mogo 10 times fast, right?
Bogo Mogo. And then last but not least, there's Mantis the manta ray, who flaps her huge wings and makes waves to clean out all the plastic.
Have you ever seen a live manta ray?
Yes, in Hawaii and I think a couple other places, including Monterey Bay Aquarium.
Mantis the manta ray, the guardian of the sea, is much bigger than a real-life manta ray.
Yes, she is huge.
And I understand that this story all started when you were in art class. And you were, I guess, instructed to paint a seahorse, and you came up with the sea dragon instead. Is that right? That was the beginning of the story?
Well, not really. I already had the story in mind. I was just doing the first piece, and mm-hmm. I think I came up with it when my mom showed me a video of the plastics in the ocean.
Right.
And I wanted to do an exhibit since last exhibit, I raised funds for the wildfire in 2017. So I wanted to do another exhibit, this time for the ocean, because it's like the ocean is dying with all the plastic and pollution. And so, yeah, and then when I went to class, I came up with the dragon seahorse. I didn't want it to be too realistic because I loved dragons at the time and I still do. I had this art teacher and she wanted me to draw just a normal seahorse, but 7-year-old me or 8-year-old me decided not to, and I said, no, I'm going to draw a seahorse dragon, and I did, and I was just defiant, and I loved that because it would have been so much more, like, realistic with a seahorse, and it wouldn't give off, like, some fantasy energy or whatever, and I think what I decided to do was a really good idea.
I agree. What did your teacher think about that?
She said, okay, yeah, I actually agree.
Well, that's good. Good for you for being defiant about that.
Bogo Mogo can never get enough plastic to eat. He wants to grow as big as he can so he can take over the entire ocean. But because the ocean is so big and the plastic is dispersed so far and wide and deep, he needs help gathering it all. This is why he's turning all the marine creatures he can get his tentacles on into plastic zombies. The plasticized creatures roam the seas looking for more plastic to collect and bring back to Bogomogo so he can grow even bigger into a superorganism that infiltrates every last one of our seas.
So when you learned about plastic in the ocean, was that specifically about the Great Pacific Garbage Patch?
Yeah, and then a few other things too about like the marine life and like how it got polluted.
Marine life obviously means a great deal to you, and living in Northern California, you're in a great place to experience a lot of marine life. Do you have any personal favorite creatures in the ocean near where you live?
I like shorebirds and seals and pretty much anything. I like starfish. They're cute.
Starfish are cute.
Speaking of seals and sea lions, I actually did an exhibit about that with statues, like fiberglass statues.
Tell us about that exhibit, because I was reading and that's a pretty interesting story.
Yeah, so there were 30 statues each. I had one of them, which they're all 6 foot tall, and I named mine Deep Blue after its representation of the ocean, of the different ocean and sea light levels, and all the marine life in it, from the twilight zone to the mountain sunlight zone.
And what was the name of this exhibit? Because this was part of a very large project.
I think it was just named Sea Lions of San Francisco.
Yeah, there aren't too many sea lions where I'm based here inland. Now, I don't officially say that I'm part of the East Coast, but I'm sort of an honorary member because I'm on the North Shore of Lake Ontario. And technically, we're connected to the Atlantic Ocean, although Atlantic Ocean has no sea lions, just seals. We do have lots of shorebirds here, however, and I would imagine you're probably seeing some sanderlings pretty regularly on your beach.
Snowy plovers.
Yeah, lots of plovers and sandpipers. So fortunately, we do have quite a few of those flying through here on a regular basis as well, and they are a personal favorite of mine. Love the shorebirds. Getting back to the Bogomogo story, you have made the very interesting decision of making this a coloring book. And the thing that I think is so neat about coloring books is the reader also gets to be a creator. So you're reading the story, but you're also creating. You get to make each character kind of look a little bit different. So why did you decide to make the Bogomogo story a coloring book?
Well, since the readers, aka creators, they get to read it and then make a perspective of their own understanding of it so they can understand it more clearly instead of just having one main focus. They can make their own like sea creatures and own colors so that they can actually enjoy it and understand it and have fun with it and make memories.
Yeah, I know a lot of my friends and family members have gotten coloring books as adults and just use them for quiet, creative time. And I think that's something that a lot of people will be very interested in with your Bogomogo story, which isn't just a coloring book. It has the text in the entire story and additional activities.
Yeah, it tells a real story and it has a meaning instead of just coloring, because that makes it more fun.
For sure. And what for you, what is the main meaning of the story?
It means that, like, since plastic is polluting the ocean by our own cause, we have to, if you make the mess, you have to clean it. And since we did it ourselves, we have to unite and just take it back and solve it, because it's our own problem.
It is, and I like that. If you make the mess, you have to clean it up. That's what I was taught when I had to clean my room. And it makes sense for the ocean, which of course we know is just about as important as anywhere. The oxygen, all the fish that we get from it, there's just so many different reasons.
Yeah.
You mentioned a bit before how you were very defiant in art class and you wanted to not just draw a seahorse, which of course is a really amazing creature, but you wanted to create a sea dragon. And the Bogomogo story and a lot of your art has a mix of both real life and imaginary creatures. Do you have a preference? Like, do you prefer to paint real life, imaginary animals, kind of a mix of both, or has that maybe changed over time?
Well, to be honest, if I want to do an exhibit with meaning, I probably do a hybrid of both. And if I just want to like doodle or make a singular painting, then I might do real life, or maybe with just a hint of imaginary to make it like even, not too hyper realistic and not too imaginary in it. Abstract.
Cool.
It usually involves a lot of colors and shades, like not just like every color, but a different range of a shade of color.
Do you ever go out into nature and sketch or draw or paint animals like as you're watching them? So if you go to the beach and you see sea lions lounging on the shore, do you ever just directly paint or draw those?
Well, Oh, not really. When I was 4, I saw sea lions at a beach. My mom took me there, and then on the way back, I took out my notepad and I started sketching the sea lions. But nowadays, I don't really do it because I think I can remember pretty clearly what they look like. And I take the inspiration with me so I don't forget, or I just practice to hold on to it and then come back home and paint it.
So you must have a photographic memory.
Yeah, sort of.
So, Ian, just to show you, I know that the podcast can't see, but this is an Oregon Junco, dark-eyed Oregon Junco, all from memory.
Yeah. So it's funny. We've set up this bird feeder just outside our home office here. It's just a pile of sticks, and there's all kinds of white-crowned sparrows coming to it, but also dark-eyed Juncos. But because we're in southern Ontario, it's the slate-colored, a.k.a. very boring version of dark-eyed Juncos.
I think they're cute.
Well, that's an interesting perspective. Something that you don't get to see regularly suddenly becomes much more interesting. And we do sometimes see the Oregon Junco, which you've painted so beautifully, and we can maybe include that image up on our website as well. The Oregon Junco with an all-dark head and really nice sort of reddish chestnut brown coloring along the sides, which the slate-colored Junco of the East does not have, unfortunately. But you're right, they are very cute. And it is always nice when they return for the winter, which was about a month ago. They got back from the north a little over a month ago.
Aww.
As you know, the winter gets a little chilly up here in the Northeast, and having Juncos coming to the bird feeder is a nice way to warm the soul.
Well, there's this one Junco that comes to our patio, and he has two feathers sticking out of his butt. And it makes him look so unique, and we call him Beppo because... why not? He's just so cute, and he comes back. I haven't seen him since. He might be migrating already, but
yeah,
Beppo the Junco.
He probably has a very interesting story to tell with only two little tail feathers.
Well, no, he has tail feathers. It's sticking out of his back.
Oh, out of his back. Okay, well, maybe something tried to attack him, and maybe a couple of the feathers got sent askew. And in any case, he probably, if he could talk... could probably tell an interesting story.
Yeah.
It's time for a short break. We'll be right back.
Hey folks, it's Ian here. I just want to let you know about our two nonprofit books, Teaching Kids About Climate Change and Teaching Teens About Climate Change. Each one serves as a toolbox with ready-to-use hands-on lessons which are focused on four dimensions of climate change: global warming, climate instability, consequences of global warming, and climatic flip. If you're interested in placing an order, just visit us at greenteacher.com. We also have special rates available for bulk orders.
Things are becoming dangerous as increasing numbers of marine animals fall prey to Bogomogo. But the sea is wise and powerful. Assaulted by microplastics, billions of zoo and phytoplankton send out distress signals through the waves. The guardians of the sea, the ocean's mythical protectors, awaken from their deep slumber. Finn the sea dragon, Mantis the manta ray, Coral the sea turtle, and the mysterious hornet the dragon eel. Each has a special power to hold Bogomogo at bay.
So with the Bogomogo story, as more and more people get to read it and use it and do the actual coloring, what do you hope people learn most from the story?
Besides the coloring and all the activity, I want them to learn about the oceans and the plastics and that... not to use single-use plastics or just, like, maybe limit the use, at least, of all plastics except bioplastics, which are great.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, and then they should learn about marine life and take it seriously because there's no planet B. I mean, the sea gets destroyed. We're pretty much screwed because it's the main source of oxygen and we get a lot of seafood from it.
With regards to the single-use plastics, that's such a tough one, especially now with the pandemic and so many safety precautions and so many people using plastics and rubber gloves and these sorts of things. And that there's just so much more waste over the past few months. Do you have any advice that you would give to anybody, young or old, about ways that they can limit single-use plastics even during this time of the pandemic when we seem to be going through so much waste?
Ask the companies to stop making the plastics and turn into bioplastics. That way it's better for everyone and everything. Also, like, maybe not use the bags if you can. I recommend, like, leather bags or fabric bags. Masks are fine because you need them no matter what, but try not to, like, use a lot of masks. Like, try to reuse them. Gloves you can reuse and wash a few times. Maybe you can make some, like, arts and crafts out of them. But...
And that's a great idea about reused materials for art, and that fits in with the whole idea of upcycling. And a good artist friend is actually an art teacher from when I was in high school. That's a big thing that he does, is using materials that a lot of people would see as waste and covering them in wasted paint or used paint, and then reusing those materials in installation projects or murals. Aww. And it's creative, it's green, it's really interesting, it's a really interesting story. He actually wrote an article for Green Teacher. I will send you the link. It's very interesting.
All right.
Something needs to be done about the amount of plastic in the patch. Coral calls out to Mantis, another guardian of the sea, to help. While Finn biodegrades the plastic and thousands of marine creatures, and Coral makes undersea volcanoes erupt against Bogomogo, something also needs to be done with the vast amounts of plastic still floating in the ocean, because that is what Bogomogo is feeding on and what gives him strength.
So 2020, needless to say, has been a very interesting year, and you had all kinds of plans and exhibitions planned, and many of them were interrupted because of the pandemic. What do you have coming up next in the near future?
Amazonas, the jungle exhibit. I still have to work on it, but I have a finished Quetzal piece. You can find it on my website in exhibits. And it's representing the beauty of the jungle, because right now it's in flames. Most of it is in. Because the wildfires, the jungle is a very, very sacred place because it holds many tribes, traditional tribes, and fruit and wildlife. And it also is a great oxygen source, and it's super beautiful.
It is. Have you been there to the Amazon basin?
No, not really. I mean, I've went to South America when I was 2 years old, but I can't quite remember anything.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but I want to go there sometime. Not now.
No one's doing much traveling at all short term. But yes, hopefully there will be opportunities to go and see the, as you say, a great store of oxygen and, of course, a great source of life, biodiversity, and beautiful birds like the Quetzal that is featured in one of your paintings. Anything else that you have coming up in the near future?
I have Exodus and lots of other paintings for social justice. Here it is. You can also find it in my website in the section Our Worlds, Our Times. And yeah, and I want to start a global movement with young artists that can submit their work to a website that we're still planning. And we can put their credits in the description of the art. And just as for either like social justice or like environmental issues, we're still working on it, but I think it's a great idea.
It is, and I hope you're able to connect with many artists all across the world who can share your passion for all things natural, all things wild, and contribute through their creativity a way to conserve and protect them so that we can continue to coexist with them.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Arya Luna, for joining us for this discussion today. It's great hearing about your art, your current projects, your upcoming projects, and your overall mission. It's a big task, but it's one that, as you say, we need to do, because there is certainly no planet B.
Thank you so much for interviewing me.
Plastic can be broken apart, crushed, washed back ashore, even electrified and injected with deadly toxins. But the lifespan of plastics ranges from 450 years for a plastic water bottle to more than 5,000 years for extruded polystyrene foam, you know, those white styrofoam cups. So Bogomogo's got time on his side, and that's not even talking about the 300 million tons of new plastic produced every year. The Guardians now need the help of the people who invented plastics in the first place. They need the help of the humans. Specifically, they need your help.
Talking with Green Teachers is co-hosted by Ian Shanahan and me, Sofia Vargas Nessi. We also voice all ads. Ian serves as the show's writer and editor. Our logo design is by Devin Therrien. Look for our monthly episodes on greenteacher.com. For access to all episodes, subscribe to Green Teacher and also receive our quarterly magazine, as well as exclusive access to our vast archive of webinars and magazine back issues. Thank you for joining us on this episode. We'll chat again soon.